This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios,
here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
It is time for another edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. My name is Matt Perrault, alongside Mike Herzing. Each and every week, we are here talking about everything going on in the automotive space. Mike, how are you? Lots to get to this week.
Oh, man, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's not all good. It's a little, oh, man, this chip thing is killing me, guys.
Well, we're going to get into all this during the news and notes segment. And this is one of those things where I don't think the average person who is listening to this program understands where the automotive space is, because we all heard the doom and gloom from COVID. But Mike, you and I were just talking off air for a second. Yeah. And I mean, you could make a case that this, because the demand is there, this might actually be a worse situation for the automotive industry than what we just went through.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's a lot of it attributed to COVID, but it's just a lot of things, you know, fire in one of the chip factories. But now there's a shortage of seat foam, and now there's a shortage of rubber. So we're going to get into all that, but it's crazy. I mean,
you can't, this is kind of like the whole real estate thing, right? Like, you can't make real estate. If this stuff isn't around, you can't just like conjure it up out of thin air. You can't like go in their backyard and grab these microchips. Like, you have to make them and make them available, right?
Yeah. And the worst part is cars are built in layers. So you can't just put the microchip, it'll build the car and put the microchip in later. It doesn't work that way. Mm. You get, the whole production stops. And we'll talk about that, because it's getting crazy, guys. It's just, it's nuts. I just never thought I'd ever see this.
Well, what's also kind of troublesome are the news that we'll get into as well about plants being shut down because they cannot produce. They don't have the right materials to be able to produce the vehicles. We've got, and then the trickle down, right? It's not just the vehicles not being able to be produced because the dealerships now can't sell them, but now the rental car fleets, they don't have the cars available to be rented.
Right.
So like, it's just like this one thing after another. Like, you don't think like, okay, in order to make lemonade, you got to be able to have lemons. Well, if the tree doesn't grow, there's no lemonade. Like, it's all trickle down. It's this whole long thing that kind of goes through that you can't get to unless you've got these products. So it's a tough time right now in the automotive industry, and you probably aren't hearing about it in your local news. So Mike and I are here for you. We're going to break it all down coming up with our news and notes segment. It's not all the warm and cheery stuff that we like talking about, but it's definitely a major, major story we'll get to coming up next here. It's time for our news and notes on Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Stuck Wheels news and notes here for us this week, Mike Herzing and Matt Perrault. All right, let's get into this, Mike, because there's a lot of layers here. Okay, let's just start with the chips. Where are we with the microchip shortage right now across the automotive industry?
Well, you know, microchip is the automobile industry is fighting with the electronics industry and things like that for these chips. And, you know, it's just, it was COVID, and then there was a fire in one of the big chip factories, and they lost some of their clean rooms, and it's just a comedy of errors. Even the government has stepped in. The Japanese government's stepped in to try to get this thing going. And I know it will work. I know it'll come back, but it's not going to come back till later in the year. As a matter of fact, I hear that Ford is going to pause their production of the F-150. That's their cash cow. That, you know, they, F-150 series ride along makes more than Coca-Cola does. So, I mean, and, you know, for them to quit making, you know, the Escape or no, I'm trying to put it, pick me one of the slower sellers, they don't quit making one of the slow sellers is one thing.
Right.
But to them to have to pause the F-150. Oh my gosh. You know, it's same thing with Ram and Jeep. You know, they paused the production of the Pacifica minivan and some of the other vehicles, and use the chips for something that sells better and makes them more money. Well, GMC's done the same thing. Just like Chevrolet built some trucks, a big series of run of trucks that didn't have the engine module that shuts down the module for better fuel economy. Okay. The eco module. Okay. So it would shut down the engine to like four cylinders on the freeway when you don't need it. And it gives them an extra mile per gallon. Well, they had to leave that module out of a big run of trucks, and it's not like, and they can't add it back later. So if you buy one of those, you just get crappier fuel economy.
Wow.
And I mean, it's just nuts. So now I found out, I talked to a friend of mine up in Detroit. He works for one of the big manufacturers, one of the big three. And he said, I'm out there sourcing rubber. We can't have the rubber to get our moldings. With the companies just telling us like that makes rubber moldings and some of the other things. They just said, our production is going to slow down and stop because we can't get the rubber.
So what is causing like the chip shortage? I understand. I don't fully get the rubber shortage. What is causing the rubber shortage?
I don't. Something, there was some kind of problem in another country that was, you know, what would cause the rubber problem. I don't know exactly what causes it, but you know, it's also a lot of it's COVID and a lot of people had to shut down and they're way behind. Yeah. It's like the freeze we had in Texas in the Midwest. They ended up having a problem with some of the plants that produce a certain, a oil-based thing, a petrochemical things that you make seat foam with. Okay, now right. We're short on seat foam. Yeah. And then there's a shortage of that. And then the funny thing is, and here's how it does plays down and how it's all in a, it's all one family. Okay, if there can only build so many cars, like say Ford, they want to sell the F-150 and the F-2, the ones that make them the most money. Sure. Okay, those kind of things. Sure, they're big sellers. They're cash cows. Okay, but they're not going to sell those to the rental fleets. Because when you sell to a rental fleet, you don't make any money. You know, it's a gimme. It's just to keep the factories busy and stuff like that. So the rental companies that sold off a bunch of stuff for COVID and they went through bankruptcies and stuff like that. Now they're going, okay, now we need cars because it's all coming back. And the manufacturers are going saying, sorry, we don't have any.
There's so many layers to this because let's just take it in for what's going on here in Las Vegas. Okay. So Las Vegas has one of the biggest rental car fleets in the entire country. You get off the plane, you go to a gigantic terminal where you go to rent your car. And I've heard stories of this, of extremely long lines for people who are trying to get rental cars. One, because of the rental car number of the shortage, and folks that would come to Vegas and anticipate having Ubers and Lyfts available are now being told, look, Ubers and Lyfts are not available. I saw this with my mom, brother, and sister, and my other brother who came into town 2 weekends ago, and they couldn't get an Uber home from the airport. I had to go pick them up.
Right.
They couldn't get an Uber to the airport. I drove them. It was the first time in my 6 years of living here in Las Vegas where it was like, wait a minute, what? You can't find a single Lyft or an Uber. Forget surge pricing. You can't find drivers. They're not there. So it's all this massive trickle down because there's no Uber and Lyfts. So people are renting more cars now when they come to Vegas and there's less cars to be rented. It's but all also, a mess.
People don't going to get in a car that 45 other people have been in that night.
True. That's Well, okay. In Vegas they might, but yes, I know what you're saying. I mean, well, it's people here in Vegas, they want to go out and they want to travel.
Sure.
And the strip is so large that you can't walk it. I mean, people who have been here, you understand. True. You're not walking that 4 mile stretch on the strip. You know, it just takes you forever just because it's not a straight line and you know, you can't just go, you have to eat people all over the place and it's just not easy to get around. So you want to get away from that. You want to drive. So because of that, there's a shortage. It's incredible. There's a shortage of Ubers and a shortage of way to drive. Right now, there's a shortage of rental cars. So now across the country, because you aren't getting, you know, the little four door economy sold vehicle that's 20,000, that vehicle is not available now. So because they're not going to produce it. So now you just wonder, what does this do to like the mid level? I think the high end car rental people will be okay because they're buying their vehicles and they're selling and that those rental prices are expensive. The lower end, real low end rental cars will be fine. They'll just buy used cars and have those be the rental cars people buy.
With you know, used car market is crazy right now. But that's I'd get my notes and about the rental, the rubber shortage. A lot of it has to do with companies that are the countries that are stockpiling it, which is another problem with the chips. We've got some countries like China and things like that are stockpiling chips for them.
Oh,
okay. And I don't blame them in a way. You know, it's kind of like we stockpiled some of the COVID vaccine for the U.S. and then we'll sell everybody our extras. Well, they're doing that with this. They're also stockpiling rubber. We've also got that's crazy mess in the Suez Canal that tied up shipping lanes for a couple of weeks. And then we've also got some kind of a virus that killed a bunch of damaged a lot of the rubber plants. Rubber is now four times expensive as it as it was.
Wait, it's not a COVID virus, like a virus that impacts the rubber plant?
No, yeah, just a virus, a plant damage. Something damaged the plant.
Weird.
Disease, basically, you know. Well, just like the right now, the price of wood is the highest it's been. I mean, a sheet of plywood's $80, $70 for a good sheet of plywood. When really? It, you know, yeah, it's like four times as much money. There's so many houses being built, and we have pine bark beetles that have gone, especially in South America, that have come in and destroyed a lot of the trees production. That's the way it's in East Texas. They're fighting it right now. And really? Pine beetles. And yeah, it destroys the trees. And I can tell you, I got 30 acres of them. And so I have to watch out for it. If they come in, it's a pain. But
how do you keep trees away from pine beetles?
Yeah, you have to spray some stuff, but also knock the tree down, you know. Ooh. and hope for the cold. The cold weather should help. That cold snap we had should help a lot. But they climb underneath and peel the bark off. And so either way, the whole point is, it's really nuts right now. And then the government wants to buy more vehicles and things like that. It's just, you know, it's crazy. I mean,
On a positive note, let me ask you kind of an interesting story that I was planning on talking this week before this all broke. What do you make of Amazon buying 100,000 electric vehicles to build out their fleet?
I think that is awesome because that's the perfect use of an electric vehicle.
Right.
Stop, start, stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. And they come right back home. You know what I mean? Commercial wise, I think it's great. They've got a big van. They've got plenty of room underneath. They can put batteries in it real easy. They've got some of these companies that are just making commercial vehicles that are battery electric. And that's all they do.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like people that make mail trucks, you know. I think that is awesome. Here's, for example, right now, it's just something else that's kind of related. Honda's recalling 628,000 vehicles to replace fuel pumps. Just about everything in their lineup needs a fuel pump. 628,000 right here in the U.S. And including the RFC, everything from like 2018 to 2020 has got a battery impeller. All of them. Just about every Honda, Acura and things like that. Most of their line, there's some exceptions, but most of them take almost the same fuel pump. Well, the point is they're going to have a problem getting parts for the fuel pump. You know, so think of all the recalls that are coming up where they're going to need chips and parts and things like that. Subaru's got 875,000 vehicles they're going to recall because of a suspension part and another part, electronic part that makes the ignition coil stay on. It can actually burn up the coil. So they're going to replace the coils and reprogram the computer and things like that and replace some things and replace that rear suspension part. But a lot of that is where they're going to get some of the parts. So this has just become, it's like COVID. We started COVID last year and we're like, oh, this is no big deal. It's just a virus. It won't bother us. And then all of a sudden it just ate our lunch.
Well, do you think it's is it to the point now where the auto industry will raise its hand to the federal government and say, help?
Oh, they did that two months ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The government's in the middle of this too. You know, they've got companies. Well, you know how the government is, but you know,
right.
I'm from the government. I'm here to help. Yeah, right. But the point is, that's what Ronald Reagan used to say. Those are the worst words you would ever want to hear. Yeah. But the point is they've you know, these new Samsung, some other companies are come in. They're going to build their chip factories and everything, but that's not till we're not going to see that till next year.
Right.
It's just, and I think it'll catch up and everybody's busting their butt and everybody's working 24/7 and everything else and it'll come back, but it's going to be, the summer is going to be lost. But think of people like GM that has all those new vehicles coming out, the electric vehicles. Think of Stellantis, which is going to electrify all of their vehicles, but they have just like the Jeep Wagoneer, the Grand Wagoneer, the new Grand Cherokee, just those right there, the new Wrangler electric, all those things are coming out. They're all going to be delayed. Even the Bronco has been delayed two or three different times for different parts. Huh. So that's going to be, I mean, think of all these wonderful cars coming out and all of a sudden they're going to be delayed. Even the Hummer, I'm sure it's so electronic heavy. Everything's so heavy with electronics. It's going to be, this is going to get worse before it gets better. That's what I've heard. You cannot find rental cars right now.
Unbelievable. Not good. Well, we do have our automotive reviews that are coming up in the next segment, and then we got our interview as well. So we're going to cheer you up. We're going to change gears, and we're going to give you some good news and some good things coming down the pike in the automotive industry. It is Let's Talk Wheels right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Time now for automotive reviews here on Let's Talk Wheels. Mike Herzing's got his coming up here in just 1 second. I was driving a 2021 Lexus 350 RC. Now, this is a fun vehicle, okay? And it's not a cheap vehicle. It's an extremely luxurious vehicle, but if you can afford this vehicle and you're looking for a true sports sedan with a ton of luxurious features, boy, this thing really gets it done. And I know there are a lot of people who will look at this vehicle and say, hasn't it been around for a long time? It has been around for a long time. Okay. They have done some upgrades to it. This is a two-door vehicle. So I know two doors aren't always the most convenient for somebody like me who has a little kid. It's a little annoying, only two doors, having to, you know, drop the seat or pop the seat up in order to get the person in and out. There's not a ton of space in the back seat. Okay. But it is a beast on the road. It's a driver's car. Okay. It's for somebody who just absolutely loves to drive quick, fast, and enjoy a turbocharged V6 engine that just goes. It just absolutely goes. It hugs corners. It's got just a great grill. The sound of the vehicle when you start it up, it's just got a ton of meat, 311 horsepowers, 8-speed automatic. I had the F Sport, okay, so I had it fully tricked out with everything you would want, power moonroof and everything else you'd want in the thing. It just looks absolutely gorgeous. It's gorgeous to drive. It's a ton of fun, and it gets decent gas mileage. I was getting like 25, 26 miles per gallon. It says 28 on the highway, but I was getting about that. It's quick, and it's nimble, and it does what you want it to do. And I found this thing to be just completely and totally a blast. And if you can afford the F Sport, do it. Lexus has to do something with their technology packages. They've got to find a way to upgrade it. The interior is so great. It has Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, which is awesome. But for a vehicle that's pretty expensive, you know, you can get this thing, you know, all the way up $52,000, $53,000. It's not a cheap vehicle by any means. The F-Sport is definitely the trim level I would go to if you can afford it. But I mean, it's starting, you know, $53,000. Okay. It's not cheap. Gorgeous interior. Gorgeous seats. I love the steering wheel. I love all the instrument panels. I love the very large infotainment display that's right in front of you. Very easy to see everything. It's got great sight lines. It's just an awesome vehicle. I don't love the touchpad. I know Lexus really likes that thing. They need to find a better way of using that personally. I don't love it. I would love to see something different go into there. But, you know, they've got just really cool features and really cool things all over this vehicle that when you get into it, it's the F-Sport trim level. So you got all the branding, all the badges everywhere. It moves. It just absolutely totally moves. And the seats are incredibly comfortable. You feel like you're in a cockpit. You feel like you're about to really get rolling here. And like I said, the trunk space is big. I mean, it's a big, if you go into the airport, I picked up my brother from the airport there. It's really easy. If you can afford this vehicle, which is if you get it all the way timed, you know, fully loaded, it's going to be approached $60,000 for this thing. But it is extremely well made. It is gorgeous on the interior. It has awesome, awesome, quick off the line power and capability. Everything you'd want this vehicle to do, it does. It's a ton of fun to ride. It's a ton of fun to be in it. Just not the biggest of back seats, so it's not really a family car. But, you know, I would like to see them upgrade the infotainment system. I don't like the trackpad at all. Fuel economy is okay. But all in all, if you are in the market for a true sport sedan that's luxurious, the luxury angle, drive it, compare it to some of the other vehicles in the same class. Audis would love you to sit down and drive theirs. But, you know, Lexuses have been around for a while, but there's a reason for it because they're absolutely awesome and they're a ton of fun to drive. Definitely, if you can do a test drive, I would check it out. If you like sports sedans, this is one of the best I've ever driven in terms of fun, capability. It's a two-door luxury vehicle, the 2021 Lexus RC F-Sport, RC 350 F-Sport. Awesome drive, awesome ride, really, really fun to get behind the wheel. All right, Mike, what were you driving this week?
Folks, this week I was driving the 2021 Cadillac CT5V. Now, they make several CT5s, and CT5 replaced the CTS, which I love that vehicle. They have the standard one, the luxury, premium luxury, sport, and then V-Series. Now, the V-Series is the fast one. It's fun to drive. All these are rear-wheel drive. The one I had was a 3-liter twin-turbo V6, 360 horsepower, 10-speed transmission, runs great. It is so much fun to drive. It just zips in and out of traffic. You can have like a sport mode, push the V button, the V-Series button, and it just, everything comes on. The suspension tightens up. Now, the V-Series comes with magnetic ride control, which is probably the best suspension, performance suspension out there on the market. It will change from full hard to full soft at 60 miles an hour in 6 inches of travel. It's that special. And I think that was the old ones. The new one, I think, is even better than that. Now they have coming later in this year, the Blackwing CTS, CT5V. See, I keep calling it CTS. 6.2 liter supercharged V8, hand built, 668 horsepower, over 200 miles an hour, the most powerful Cadillac ever made, with the best brakes of anything you have. This one has the Brembo brakes. It has big wheels and tires, big wide tires. They stick like glue. Of course, with that suspension system, you can actually fling it into a turn and it's level. It adjusts so fast. It's crazy. These things, I've driven these on a racetrack. They are so much fun to drive. It's nice. These things start at $37,990 for the standard version, the luxury version. The V series starts at $48. Once you load it up with a bunch of goodies, probably you run around $60 at sticker. Probably you can do better than that when you go to buy it. But that's one of the things they have is Super Cruise. That is a wonderful product. That's like Tesla's Autopilot, but I think it works a little bit better. I've used Autopilot once, actually twice, and I thought it was great, but I think this one is even better. I drove a lot with it, and I've used it actually on some of the GMCs I had recently and stuff. It's a great system. It's really nice. You have to buy the driver assist package, but it's really worth it. If you're going to buy one of these, buy it what you want. This thing is quiet on the highway, comfortable, great Bose audio system. Oh my gosh. Has a big 12-inch diagonal HD reconfigurable gauge cluster. I got a heads-up display. This had a 10-inch nice screen. And you know what? They don't have, you know, a lot of these things are all high tech and there's no buttons. They have lots of buttons. And I like that. Old farts like me love buttons and I'm just used to it. Like, for example, you want to do the volume. It's on the panel there. You can go to the center console and adjust the volume. You can go on your steering wheel and adjust the volume. So it's really kind of cool. It has OnStar and that's all really cool. And, it's got a nice kind of, it's just so neat. It's redundant. A lot of redundant controls, and they're very user friendly. It's really neat, and Bluetooth pairing is so easy. It's got 3 USB ports. It's got an SD card reader. All these auxiliary power outlets. The Bose 15 speaker system was just awesome. Wireless Apple CarPlay, wireless Android Auto, wireless charging that works really fast. It's got a 4G LTE Wi-Fi hotspot. Guys, this is a Cadillac. This is an awesome vehicle. They even have a teen driver mode where you can set it up for your kid and limit the power and make them wear seat belts so the car won't move. Little things like that. You got to look at this, folks. I mean, granted, I would love to have the back black wing, but not everybody wants that. Some people want a nice car that's fun to drive. And this thing looks good. The one I had was white with a tan interior, really nice, supple leather, very comfortable. You can actually has lumbar adjustments on the seats. And that comes with cars that'll cost a lot more money. And this is really, like I said, it's a good value situation. And the Cadillac dealers will work with you. They're good folks. It's just, you know, that HD color distring, the touchscreen, you can personalize it all kinds of ways. Your user profiles can store it up in the cloud and you can access your custom profile in other GM vehicles. That's what's cool. You know, if you rent one or something, it's there. So it's really, like I said, the seats, 10 to 18 ways of adjustment, depending on which one you want. Fun vehicle. Okay. When you pull in a parking lot with this vehicle and it's the V series, it's easily noticeable. It looks lower, wider, faster, and they look so good.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
Hey guys, welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. Mike Herzing, Matt Perrault. Hey folks, in this segment, I want to talk to
Trevor Lai. He is head of product planning for Hyundai, and we're at this event in Tucson, and they just showed us the new Santa Cruz Sport Adventure vehicle. It's a whole new segment. Trevor, this is so cool, and welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Mike.
What have you guys done? This is something we saw the concept a couple years ago, and everybody's like, "Ooh, it's going to be really cool." This looks a lot better than the concept.
Absolutely, and it was actually a direct result of media reaction and shopper reaction from your readers that actually helped drive this concept vehicle into production. So it's been a 6-year journey for us.
You know, even when I mentioned the other day that I was going to go see it, hopefully for the launch of that, I got a bunch of emails from our listeners because this is something that really touches. They want something that's not so big and maybe not so expensive and maybe get better fuel economy and just more fun. And this is fun.
Totally. It actually hits on all those cylinders. We designed it ground up to be affordable. We've noticed, you know, from a functional point of view, there really hasn't been a smaller utility type of vehicle with an open bed. We've delivered on that. If you want to have higher output, we've delivered on that. And it has SUV-like fuel economy. The fuel economy piece is very important. A lot of the bigger vehicles now, not so great on fuel.
Yeah, it seems like little trucks, for example, and I know it's not a truck technically, but little trucks are not little anymore. And big trucks are just, you know, they started, the decent one is $50,000. It's crazy. And people don't always need that. And that this is I remember years ago when Subaru had something called the Brat, and it didn't really work, and it was probably ahead of its time. This is so much better than any of those put together. This looks so good. And now, what's it based on?
The Santa Cruz is actually based on our new Tucson, the new Tucson we've been driving most recently here in Tucson, Arizona. Great vehicle, and we share a lot of the similar architecture, especially in the interior.
Okay, it's four-door, basically from the back seats forward, it's similar to, the Tucson, right?
From the interior experience, yes, we do have distinctive front-end styling, quite a bit more aggressive for this type of buyer. It's going to be different than your mainstream Tucson buyer, so it does help it set apart quite a bit. We spent a lot of time in the rear seat package to make sure it had a lot of good comfort for the passengers as well. That can't be compromised.
Well, it does look more aggressive. The styling, the stance is much wider. It seems to be, this thing looks like a beast from the front. It looks really good, and I'm like, wow, I mean, this is something that's pretty exciting.
The design for this was based in California. And so that toughness, that is something that is distinctly American. It is designed for American roads. In fact, the only markets that are going to be taking this vehicle, this new Santa Cruz, is the United States and Canada. So Korea did something very special for us that allowed us to do this.
Okay, now powertrains. Let's talk about powertrains. You've got two engines for it. We haven't got the hybrid stuff yet. We haven't gotten into that stuff. I know it'll come. But right now, let's worry about what we got. And we've got two engines. Tell the folks about the engine and transmission packages.
Absolutely. The standard engine is going to be shared with our Tucson. The base engine, that's going to be a 2.5-liter. It's actually MPI and GDI. So you have port fuel injection and gasoline direct injection. That puts out about 290 horsepower and about 190 horsepower and about 180-ish pound-feet of torque.
And it runs fine. That runs fine. I drove one today. Runs great. But you have something a little bit more.
We have more. But wait, we have more.
That's right.
So what we do have optional, we spent a lot of time fighting for this particular powertrain for Santa Cruz because we said it is critical to the success of the product here in the U.S. And that's our 2.5T engine. That's going to put out over 270 horsepower, but what's more importantly, more than 310 pound-feet of torque. That's a lot of power.
Okay, now you're making this all-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, both, only one, which one?
We have front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive variants available with both powertrains. That is our plan.
Okay, now, the bed. How big is the bed? Tell the folks, explain to the folks to the bed, because it's pretty unique.
The bed for this particular vehicle, it is unique. We call it a sport adventure vehicle because it is a lifestyle vehicle. While it has a 4-foot bed, it has a lot of utility features built into it. It has under bed floor storage, which when you open up the door there, you can actually see into it because we have LED lights shining down into the area. We also put a drain in the area as well. So if you want to party, make that into a cooler, you can drain that out easily. We also have utility tracks on the side of the bed as well to maximize the cargo carrying capability of that bed. Payload capacity is, I believe, 660 pounds, and the tailgate alone can support 500 pounds by itself.
Okay, so the mother-in-law can sit up there. No, I'm just kidding. No, but all right. So now, does this have any tow rating or anything? Yeah, of course, people are going to want to pull little dirt bikes and things like that.
In our research, we found that towing is very important for this type of customer. It will tow up to 5,000 pounds.
Okay, this is something where somebody can throw the tent in the back, the bicycles, the kayak, the this or that. I know there's. I notice here that you've already got accessories set up for it.
Yes, we have a robust accessories program, which we'll be able to talk about in months to come. But what we do have available straight from the factory is a tonneau cover. That's something you might have noticed when we pulled the sheet off. It is a factory tonneau cover that will be covering, pardon the pun, the majority.
It's a hard cover.
It's a hard cover, absolutely. It rolls back into its canister, takes up very little room, and if you want additional room, you can actually remove it if you'd like.
Okay, yeah, that is kind of cool because it seems to be pretty handy. You guys have put a lot of work in this. How the hell, I asked this to Brandon Ramirez, one of the big guys here, and I said, how in the hell can you have something like this and not tell somebody about it? How can you keep the secret?
It's really tough, but you know what? We've been keeping the secret for so many years now. It's almost second nature to keep it secret until the last moment. It's one of those projects we weren't sure we were going to get green-lighted, and there were so many times from 2015 when I first started working on this project until now.
2015?
2015 from when I started working, and I think the concept for this dates back to even, I think, a couple years even before that. And so that entire length of time, we're talking a span of, 8 years? It's been revived and killed so many times.
Revived and killed. You know, this is the perfect vehicle for the U.S. market and probably South American market, probably the Canadian market, especially. And then you can go into a lot of countries. This could go a lot of places because it's such a utility vehicle. And with still its room in it, still comfortable. You can still go take the family out and things like that. Do you have any idea on pricing yet, or is it going to be, who knows yet?
Well, we're still working on the exact details on the pricing piece, but what I can tell you, it is something that we've designed for, it's designed on the Tucson, right? So subcompact. We're trying to stay in that price range for a starting price.
Okay, so that starts in the upper 20s, and that's fine. That's ridiculous. It's fine. You know what I mean? All right, now tell me about product planning. You've been in product planning for a lot, and you're head of product planning. How do you design stuff for 5 years from now? How do you figure out what people are going to want 5 years from now?
There's a lot of research. It's not just product planning. We rely heavily on our market research team, does a lot of upstream research into psychographics, what people are thinking, particularly now as we go into COVID and hopefully out of COVID very shortly here. You know, that's changing the way that people view transportation. There's some aversion now to air travel or even public transportation in general. So there's renewed emphasis on personal transportation. And what we heard about earlier about mobility, and that's the direction that, you know, we're moving towards as a company here at Hyundai. It's not just cars anymore or SUVs. It's all about your total mobility solutions.
You know, I noticed when COVID came and everybody wouldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything, the bicycle people, the motorcycle people, the UTV and ATV market just went exploded. The campers guys, things like that. And so it's everybody's outdoors, which, you know, in a way, that's been kind of the only good thing that came out with COVID. You've got these people that have been inside and going to Europe and doing, you know, doing these cruises and things like that. Now they're enjoying the outdoors. U.S. has got some great places, and it's so neat to see this. Now the adventure people, bicycle people, this is all over. This is exactly what they want.
Absolutely. We're seeing more and more folks who want to spend time in their bubble, right? Their bubble meaning their COVID bubble, which is their family. They can spend time together. So what are you going to do together? You want a road trip because you can still go camp by yourself, but with your family. So with all the road trip time, this is the perfect vehicle. It just worked out on the timing, right, to allow that versatility, that adventure piece that we were talking about, to be available to families.
I can see roof racks. I can see, you know, special things that fit on the tailgate to hold your bicycles. I could see so many things. Like Ford has the deals with Yakima and make the tents that come off. I'm sure you guys will have something like that. It's just, there's so many possibilities.
We do. Actually, we've recently launched a new joint effort with Thule. So we can tap into their large accessory base for all accessory needs.
You know, it's great. Now, production, where is this going to be? It was designed in the U.S. Where is it going to be produced?
It'll be produced in our plant in Alabama, 100%.
I've been in Montgomery, Alabama. What a great plant. People are so friendly. They're the nicest folks there. And it's one of the godsends for the whole area of Alabama. They love you guys there. And so they're going to build that. I mean, what else is built at that plant?
There are a lot of vehicles being built at that plant currently. We have Elantra that's built there, Sonata, Santa Fe, and the new Tucson that was just recently released. That will be produced there as well.
Man, I can see why they don't have the hybrid and things like that, because there's so many things. You're building so many things there right now. Oh, my gosh, you're going to have to just actually do a lot of it, because I know this is going to sell like crazy. Do you see some people that are buying the Tucson to Santa Fe looking at this going, wait a minute, I will get this?
We do actually do see that. We mentioned that we have an image target of the folks that we saw in the video, right? Very outdoorsy, younger folks. But in reality, as with the subcompact SUVs, what we call very bimodal, we're going to have a lot of folks that may be in their 50s as well, hobbyists, things that, kids are out of the house. They want to, go to Home Depot, buy a lot of different things to fix up their house. This is the perfect vehicle for that. You don't want to put a lot of sod in your bed? You can do that. You might not want to do that with a Tucson. You don't want to get it dirty. But the Santa Cruz, it's no problem.
I remember when Ford came out with the Explorer Sport Track back in 2000 and, 4, 5, and 6, something like that. And people loved it, especially like realtors and things like that, or somebody that wanted to bring a little furniture. It was just so handy to have that space.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a modern-day El Camino, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. It's a smaller, but it's wider. And it's just more aggressive looking. It looks great. Those new daytime running lights on the new front grill and everything. Folks, you're going to have to look at this. The photos, when I see this, you're going to just really like it.
Absolutely. Go check it out at the dealerships later this year. It'll be on sale before you know it.
It will. And you guys are so good. But product planning, once again, I just can't imagine what it's like to be trying to figure out with COVID and all these things they throw in front of you, what's going to be available. But you're right. So many people are buying these kind of vehicles. It's really crazy.
A huge variety of vehicles that we're offering right now. And, Hyundai, we keep on growing and growing with more products. We just announced IONIQ 5. You heard about IONIQ 6 earlier, and another IONIQ product that you heard our CEO talk about. We've just actually, I think last week, just announced Kona N. And that's something that I'm working on as well. So it's a very busy time here at Hyundai.
Yeah, the N series, folks, is the hot rod series. That's the real fast things like that. The Fast and Furious type vehicles. The IONIQ would be the EVs.
Yep.
And I'm sure this will end up being an EV, and this will end up being a hybrid. But I was talking to journalists that are already going, how come you don't have a hybrid? Wait a minute, we got to at least do this. Give us a little bit of a break here.
Yes, we have, we have a lot of different powertrains available here in the United States from Hyundai, and a lot more than other OEMs have. We're not even necessarily what you might call a full-fledged OEM here in the U.S. Despite that, we have a full-fledged line of different powertrains. We have a hydrogen vehicle, a Nexo, in market right now already. We already have a bevy of electric vehicles now in market today. We've talked about, hybrid and plug-in hybrid for Tucson. So we have a lot of different offerings to cover a lot of different bases. So I think we'll be very well covered going into the future.
Yeah, you're very diversified. Now, where can we find out more about this?
Head on over to HyundaiUSA.com.
Okay, HyundaiUSA.com, because they don't sell this everywhere.
That's right. The Santa Cruz will only be available in the U.S. and Canada. So, although there has been one other global region expressing interest, so we're working with them to see what we can do.
Trevor, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Folks, that was Trevor Lai, head of product planning for Hyundai USA. Guys, this is pretty exciting. We have a lot more to come. The show has got our setup segment with Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com, all about classic cars. We've got a lot of stuff going on. Tell you what, hang on, right? There are more Let's Talk Wheels here, right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault and Mike Herzing.
It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. You guys can go to the podcast and you can hear very cool, very interesting conversations with Mike Herzing and Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com. Mike, what are you guys chatting about this week on the podcast?
We were talking about some of the vehicles on their site. Some of that, they've got a Smokey and the Bandit, Trans Am. They've got some really cool things on there. A couple of El Caminos, and they just so many neat vehicles for sale up there. Just, we were talking about the best way to buy them and things like that. But there's, gosh, I want to buy them all. I just do. I want them all.
It's a cool site. If you haven't been there, it's CLASIQ.com. It's a really neat site because you see a lot of these vehicles that are up for auction. And even if you don't ever buy one, they're just fun to look at. They're just cool to look at them because they're all these classic cars that have been redone, and you can see the sticker price, how much people are asking for them. And, there's such a big market there. If you know how to restore vehicles and you get a cool nostalgic vehicle, you can really do some cool things. And look, There are full shows. I mean, like, you know, there's a show on Netflix. It's just about restoring cars and selling them.
Right.
So
there's lots of them.
People really do enjoy that. And you guys can hear that conversation with Mike and Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com by going to where you get your podcasts and go search Let's Talk Wheels, Apple, or Spotify. Wherever you guys get your podcasts, you guys can go and search Let's Talk Wheels and find that interview, that conversation, and any part of the this program that you may have missed for Let's Talk Wheels. You can find it there as well. We are back next week, same place, same time, for Let's Talk Wheels here on Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Hey, welcome everybody to the Let's Talk Wheels podcast for the classic car segment. As usual, we got our resident car guru, Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com on the line. I tell you what, Jeremy, what's going on in LA this week?
Hey, Mike, how's it going? Not too much. You know, we're just working on listing cars and keeping them up on the website.
You know, tell the folks about the CLASIQ.com website.
Yeah, so this is an auction website we've been running auctions on past 15 weeks now. And we're really starting to get it going. Every week we have range between 6 and 8 cars that the auction ends, but we typically have 14 to 20 cars that are listed at a time.
Yep.
And so this is a place for people to buy classic cars where they can bid in an auction style format. And any auction or someone bids during the auction with less than 2 minutes left,
right,
the timer resets itself.
Oh.
So I don't know if you've been on eBay or something, but there are a lot of programs that are made so people can get a bid in right at the last second. And
right,
sometimes you're like, oh man, I would have paid that, but you don't even get the opportunity to.
Right. I won a Jeep, my 1946 Jeep that way. It was a Sunday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I bid with like about 30 seconds left and won it. And it was way lower than it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, some people are really stoked about something like that because you can score, but other people are bummed, and we want to make sure that the owner of this car and everyone involved in the auction is satisfied with what happens, and the only way to do that is make sure that everyone gets a fair chance to put a bid in.
Well, you know, Jeremy, the scariest part is I don't know about the vehicle. I can't get out there and drive it. I can't look at it. They've got a few pictures. Someone will have 30 pictures, but they're not always the ones I want. I can't hear it run. You know, I don't, you know, it's not like, you know, I asked this people last time I bought a vehicle. I said, look, get in the vehicle and drive it down the street with the phone video on. You know, we were FaceTiming it. And I said, let me just see how it is. And that was much better for me. But it otherwise, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point, and that's something that we're also combating. So every car on our website has a pre-purchase inspection. They have high-quality professional photos, and they have a walk-around video. And that's kind of to help with that uncertainty of buying a car that isn't in your neighborhood, right? And you can try and work with someone and say, hey, can you send me photos of this or can you do that? But when we have a third-party person that goes out, they write a report and say what they've seen on the car, you know, I can't say it's always 100% accurate, but at least it gives you a good depiction of the car and better than what you had before you started.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's just so important because, you know, I mean, you're buying something, you know, that my case was, you know, I was in Texas. This thing was in Oregon, this last one I bought. The other one I bought was in Colorado. And I'm like, the people sounded honest. They did this or that, but they may not know. I didn't know that the transmission, you know, if the transmission was slipping or not, you know what I mean? Am I going to have to buy it and get a transmission? So what I did is I bid low enough to where if I had to fix it, the money was there, you know, which really hurt them. They didn't get as much money out of it as they should have. And I was just lucky that everything was working. You know what I mean? It was one of those, how do you feel? What's your gut feeling? But I would much rather have somebody look at it for me.
Totally. And you bring up an interesting point is they didn't know. And you know, you're a mechanic. So when you get a car and you drive it, you're going to have a different feel than maybe somebody else who's owned a classic car. But to that person, their car is great. It's a 9, it's a 10, because they don't know any better. And you can't fault them on that.
Right.
And so that's where the benefit of having, you know, a professional go out and take another look at it and have a second pair of eyes to let the buyers know that, hey, you know, this is a great car, but you have to expect that maybe A, B, and C are wrong with it when it shows up at your house. And I think that buyers are a lot happier when they know the problems they're getting into before they get into it, because then you know how to budget your money a little bit better.
Yeah, because I'm looking at some of these vehicles. You got a 71 El Camino, and it's really nice. You've got all the way down to a 1925 Ford Model P depot truck, 78 Triumph Spitfire. I had a 72 Spitfire. You know, it was kind of fun, little bitty engine, and you've got crazy stuff. Cadillac, 84 Cadillac. 54, yep,
84 Cadillac. You know, we have a 54 Kaiser Special. So we're trying to get a big range of classic cars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been telling the people that are going out and looking for these cars that we want cars that, you know, us as classic guys will drive away. You know, and we want something. So we're trying to find, you know, like the Kaiser Special.
Right.
It's a little bit, you know, off from, say, a Bel Air or something like that, but it has the same shape and lines. And so you get a different kind of pool of people looking at it.
Sure.
And I think nowadays with people my generation looking at classic cars, they're into buying things that are a little bit different that they don't see on the road every day.
Well, I'm looking at this 80 model Pontiac Firebird, okay? And it's looks like the Smokey and the Bandit vehicle, and that's all cool. But I've got all these vehicle details, the mileage, the turbo 350. It's a rebuilt 455. Oh my gosh, big engine, and it's just really cool. It's in Washington, and there's a history about the vehicle. There's a bunch of pictures, the interior. I mean, I can see a lot about this vehicle right here. I'm seeing picture after picture after picture. And then there's somebody that gives me the pre-purchase inspection, the summary about the vehicle, somebody that knows what he's doing. I mean, this is a very, very nice vehicle, and I learned a lot about it. I would feel a lot more comfortable about bidding on it if I wanted something like this.
And even after you get through all of that information that we've provided to you, if you do have a question, we have a place you can reach out to the seller and you can ask it. You can leave a comment, and maybe someone in the community can answer it for you. We also want to make sure that at the end of your purchase that that's not the end of our job. We want to make sure that, you know, the actual sale of the car goes through. Mm-hmm. If you're not picking it up local, we can help coordinate shipping for you, because that's an issue sometimes if you're new to the classic. If you're new to cars in general, having to send a car across the country is tough, and finding the right shipper. So we have people in place so we can help that out. That way you can get your car back to you as quick as possible.
Well, I could even see some of the service records on the vehicle. I mean, you've got everything. And, you know, that's a lot of it. Because once I bought this vehicle, I had to figure out, how am I going to get the guy the money? Okay. And then I end up using it. I used it through eBay, and it was an escrow.com. And I really wasn't happy with that one. And if I was a seller, I wouldn't have been happy at all, because they wouldn't pay the seller until I got the vehicle. Okay, and then I had to encode it. It took about 3 or 4 days or 5 days to ship it. And then I finally get it, and then I'm supposed to sign off on it. And then I have 10 days or so many days to sign off on it. And before that, the guy doesn't get the money. So if it takes a week to ship it and I get another 10 days after that, we're talking over 2 weeks, and the people don't have their money yet. And that's
fair. That's not fair. And so we feel that, you know, every deal and every situation is going to be a little bit different because of the parties involved. So we try and make it easiest and the best way possible. We recommend that doing a bank transfer is the safest, most secure way to do it. Mm-hmm. But there's still some uncertainty. So if you don't feel comfortable like that, we have an escrow service that we're working with through a company called Duala, which helps out. Mm-hmm. And we can kind of make the terms on both sides agreeable. It's not hard, set in stone.
Right.
Because, you know, every situation is different, like I said.
Yeah. And I had the option to send it back. Okay. But I'm thinking, wait a minute, it cost me $1,500 to get it. I'm going to send it back for $1,500 just so the deal's over with. Now, maybe if it was a $100,000 car, okay. But it wasn't, you know? And so that's part of the point. And then it cost me for that too. So everything was okay. I mean, I should have, in retrospect, I should have flown up there and checked it out. But it was one of those, you only have so many days till the auction's over. And you never know. You know what I mean? I could have flown up there, and then I said, yeah, I really want it. And then all of a sudden, the last minute, somebody outbids me. And so then when I flew up there for nothing. So the fact that you have these, you know, these videos and you have things like that, I've got somebody out there that's an expert that will drive it. You know, As a matter of fact, it's real funny. Our good friend Dave Stahl from KCBQ in San Diego, he does a radio show, and he does 5 hours every Sunday on radio, and then he does television, Channel 51 down there. And Dave has just signed on to do some of these pre-purchase inspection. I don't know if it's for you guys, but some company had him go look at a 49 Buick Roadmaster this week, you know, and Dave knows all about cars. He used to be a service manager at a car dealership and things like that. So I would trust him to say, yeah, this is a good car, or no, it's not really not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're getting really qualified people to go out and look at these cars. You know, most of the time it is someone like Dave who's spent, you know, decades of his life in the automotive industry and working on cars and being with car people. So you know how to set people's expectations for what the car is and write it up in a way that car people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it makes such a huge difference. Now, you know, but the classic.com, not only is this podcast on classic.com on your contact page, but tell the folks some of the other things. I love those interviews you did with the designers of all the old classic cars, and you went to Detroit and did all that. Tell the folks about that.
Yeah, and I actually, you know, I got a piece in the mail the other day, and it was from one of the designers. It was one of the pieces that I really liked, and I'd been speaking with him about it.
Yeah.
But I went to Detroit, and I went to 11 different designers that worked for Ford, General Motors, Cadillac, all the way up to a guy named Bill Porter, who was one of the chief designers on the Pontiac Firebird. And they told us their stories of what it was like going through school as a designer and then trying to get into the automotive industry and then being in those rooms where tough decisions were made on some of these cars that, you know, we look back as the favorite cars that we have. And so they showed us their art. They took us through their studios. It was an amazing experience, and I got to document it all. I have, you know, 10 to 15, almost 20 minutes with some guys on YouTube as well, classic.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of cool. Listening to those guys talk, they're just old farts like me, and they just love to talk. And they want to talk cars. And these are so interesting. Like the one guy that did the clay modeling on the Pacer, you know, and I'm like, these guys are around to the coolest, from AMC and things like that. I'm talking about these guys are around when the automotive industry wasn't all computerized and it didn't have all these, you know, 3D models and 3D printing and things like that. These guys had to draw it. Then they had to make it in clay. Then they had to sell it, you know, and so that was so interesting.
That guy's name was Frank Pasco, and he was one of the first of his kind. They would actually shape clay with their hands into the models, just going from the sketches that the designers had, and that would go from, you know, a 1/8 scale to full scale models. And he talks about his career when he came in as a clay modeler, and when he finished, he was helping do computer modeling. The last car he did was the Dodge Challenger.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. So that's, yeah, probably the 71 Challenger or something like that, 70-71.
No. The new Challenger.
Oh, really? He worked with Ralph Gilles. Oh, man, that is so cool. I was listening to how they did that, and it's really interesting.
So it's really interesting to hear a guy that goes from, you know, working with his hands in clay all the way to, you know, the computer.
Yeah, it's these guys. I mean, they're all in their 80s, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the guys that I interviewed passed away last year. So, I mean, that was an amazing opportunity to be able to catch a story and put it, you know, on film, because it won't be able to be told forever.
Yeah, that
and is now
awesome.
It will.
All right, Jeremy, we got a lot of stuff we're going to talk in next week and get down some more stuff. We're going to start talking about some parts. We're going to expand this a little bit. So, folks, if you have any classic car questions or anything, you can always find me in. Send me an email at info@letstalkwheels.com. We're going to work to get everybody an answer, but we're really going to expand this, and we really want to answer some of your questions and some of your concerns about getting into the classic car business, right?
Yeah, totally. We're going to get something on our website, too, so people can ask questions, and then we can answer them online every week.
All right, folks. Now, don't forget, you can find us on our website, letstalkwheels.com, on Facebook, Instagram. You can find us on classic.com. That's C-L-A-S-I-Q. Tell your friends about the podcast. Ask them to subscribe. We really appreciate it. So on behalf of Matt Perrault, Jeremy Bierenbaum, our producer, Jack McCraw, and also Mike Carell, the big guy himself, and me, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels radio podcast. And I'm Mike Herzing. Happy motoring, as usual.